Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Susan Guasta and Assistant City Manager Deb Shildreth. And we've got a couple other stories concerning the outdoors and climate action. The weather will be autumn-like today, partly sunny and a high of 55 and a low of 36. Then there are no more freezing temperatures forecast into next week. So bring on Indian summer. It's into next week. The highs will be 60s and in the 40s each night. Thunderstorm possible on Sunday and again on Wednesday. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that some school districts in the area were struggling to fill open positions. The Ames School District has numerous openings for such positions as custodians and educational assistants, and is also looking for substitute teachers. In Gilbert, the school district said substitutes are always in need, and the Nevada district said it has been experiencing a shortage of substitute teachers as well. Roland Story reported all its positions were filled. The Trib also reported that scientists are saying that Iowa needs to strengthen its electric grid so that it becomes more resilient to the extreme weather events that climate change is bringing. Nearly 225 scientists signed a climate statement urging utilities and transmission providers to harden and expand the state's electric grid, saying the threats to the power system will continue as Earth continues to warm. That statement goes on to say that in the Midwest, climate change has increased the frequency and intensity of heavy precipitation, floods, droughts, and extreme heat. And Iowa State University engineering professor Jim McCallie said the electrical infrastructure was not designed to withstand the intense storms and other hazards Iowa is now experiencing. And there was word that Nevada had paid tribute to a longtime volunteer with the city's fire department who had died of the coronavirus. 43-year-old Brad Tendall had been a volunteer with the fire department for the past 24 years. He had been raised in Nevada, and his brother was also a firefighter. He was the fire department's mechanic, who was always fixing vehicles at the fire station. Saturday's paper reported that two people had been arrested in connection with the April death of a 2-year-old Ames boy. 25-year-old Trevin Nicholson of Centennial, Colorado, is charged with first-degree murder and child endangerment causing death. 26-year-old Danielle Obrecht of Ames is accused of child endangerment causing death. This after a youngster was found to have severe bruising and to be suffering from trauma. He was airlifted to a Des Moines hospital, where he died. Obrecht told investigators that Nicholson, her boyfriend, had been watching the child while she was at work. The Trib also reported that not all the candidates in the upcoming election for Ames School Board showed up for another candidate forum Thursday night a week ago at the Ames Public Library. 5 of the 7 candidates were there, and one of them, Rolf Duvick, left early. The 4 who remained were all asked if they would continue the Black Lives Matter School Week that was held last year in the district. That week became controversial. All 4, Brett Becker, William Scott Dreyer, Amy Erica Smith, and Kelly Winfrey, said they would. There was also word that the Ames City Council had voted to paint a fire hydrant in front of Kevin Buck's home on Clark Avenue back to its original Kelly Green color. This after Buck had painted the hydrant to look like a Dalmatian dog. Actually, Buck had his sister do it. He just wanted to liven up the hydrant. The city looked into the possibility of creating a program to let such diversely painted hydrants exist, but in the end decided that the green that its other nearly 3,000 hydrants are painted helps firefighters quickly spot the hydrants, and that the white of Buck's hydrant could be a problem when snow covers the ground during winter. So the hydrant in front of Buck's home will be repainted if it hasn't already been, and Buck is okay with that. And the Trib reported on Iowa State University events that would take place before tomorrow's homecoming football game against Oklahoma State University at Jack Trice Stadium. Among them, a homecoming pep rally and open house, starting at 5 this Friday afternoon at the ISU Alumni Center. Sunday's paper reported that school resource officers are operating out of Ames School District buildings this year, in spite of an announcement last spring that the officers would be stationed out of the district's central office and only work in school buildings as needed. Meanwhile, the district is continuing to use a study group to work toward a recommendation of the future use of school resource officers in Ames after this year. Data gathered by district administrators and the resource officers themselves had shown disproportionate interactions between officers and Black or African American students, students who qualify for free or reduced price meals, English language learner students, and homeless students that exceed the share of the student body that those groups represent. Sunday's Trib also had long takeouts on the candidates running for the Ames School Board and for the City Council in next month's elections. 7 candidates are running for 3 open positions on the school board. Mayor John Hala is unopposed as he seeks a second term. On the City Council, Anita Rollins is running for the Ward 3 seat being vacated by incumbent David Martin. In Ward 1, incumbent Gloria Betcher is running unopposed. And in one of the at-large seats, incumbent Amber Corrieri is being opposed by Aween Majak. And the Trib's website had word that Iowa State University's football team had defeated Kansas State on Saturday night, 33-20. Tuesday's paper reported on the question still surrounding the death of an 11-year-old boy from Montezuma, Iowa. The body of Xavier Harrelson was found late last week in a field about 3 miles from Montezuma. Xavier had been missing since late May. The cause of his death has not been revealed. There was also word that an Ames woman who had died from gunshot wounds in August had been honored at a ceremony at her apartment complex last Saturday night. Purple balloons were released in memory of 32-year-old Maria Hanyan. Authorities say her boyfriend, Oscar Chavez of Ames, shot her. He is set for trial for first-degree murder next June. The balloons were released as part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And the Trib had several front-page pictures of the annual Iowa State University Homecoming Parade that made its way through downtown Ames last Sunday afternoon. The parade included the university's president, its marching band, and its cheer squad. Hundreds of spectators turned out to see all of it on a beautiful autumn afternoon. Wednesday's paper reported that Iowa Democratic Party Chair Ross Wilburn had received multiple threats, including a threat about lynching, after he wrote an opinion piece in the Des Moines Register that was critical of former President Trump. Wilburn is a state House member from Ames, and he is the first Black chair of the state's Democratic Party. Ames Police Commander Jason Tuttle confirmed that his department is investigating the threats. Wilburn said he received 2 threatening phone messages and 1 threatening email, all of which made reference to what he wrote in the article. The voicemails contained explicit language, including the use of the N-word. Iowa Republican Party Chairman Jeff Kaufman expressed support for Wilburn on Tuesday, saying he strongly condemned the racist threats that had been made. In Kaufman's words, "We can have a spirited debate on issues and candidates without threats of violence," and he went on to say he hopes those responsible are held accountable for their actions. There was also a report that about 50 people, 30 in person and 20 virtually, had attended an affordable housing event on Monday in Ames. It was hosted by a group known as a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy, and every Ames City Council and mayoral candidate was invited. And the Trib reported that better-than-expected yields and strong prices are making this harvest a profitable one for Iowa farmers, who were lucky enough to get rain at just the right time this year. Corn farmers are expected to average 201 bushels per acre this year, the third highest yield in 155 years of U.S. Department of Agriculture records. Soybean farmers are expected to average 61 bushels an acre. That's the highest yield in nearly a century of records. And at the same time, corn and soybean prices are some of the best in recent years. Corn prices averaged $6.38 a bushel for Iowa farmers in August. That's more than twice the price a year earlier. And soybean prices average $13.70 a bushel. That's 60% higher than last year. Yesterday's paper reported that a heated discussion took place Monday regarding Boone's potential health center. The project is designed to invigorate downtown. Among the discussion points, the cost. The council soon plans to vote to put a $10 million bond referendum on the ballot for next March. The facility would be built at 628 Story Street in Boone, a site that once housed a Fairway grocery store and then a string of restaurants. The building will be torn down by the end of this year. In addition to the $10 million bond issue, the city also hopes to raise another $3 to $5 million. But some business owners in Boone say the proposed health center would strain downtown parking, and some say the center would be in competition with them. There was also a report on the strike at John Deere Company facilities across Iowa. The United Auto Workers called the strike a week ago, and more than 10,000 Deere employees in Iowa and several other states walked off the job. About 6,700 of those workers are at Iowa plants in Ankeny, Davenport, Dubuque, Ottumwa, and Waterloo. And the Trib reported that the State Park Centennial Vintage Auto Tour will make stops at Ledges, Big Creek, and Spring Lake Parks tomorrow. The public is invited to join the tour in their own cars, even if their vehicles are not vintage or classic. The tour is expected to arrive at Ledges tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. And today's Trib has word that Iowa State University has released more details about that crew club accident that killed two students at Little Wall Lake earlier this year. Among the new information, the two who died had never rowed on the water, and that team members' excitement for a chance to be on the water after an 18-month break caused by the coronavirus pandemic likely clouded their judgment about the safety of the conditions that day. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking my leave now, but already making plans to return right here to the same virtual seat on Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news around Iowa. I hope you'll be here as well, and I hope we both have a great weekend.
Someone told me it's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it. I do believe it's true. It's a light and tumble journey from the east side to the park. Just a fine and fancy ramble to the zoo. But you can take a crosstown bus if it's raining or it's cold. And the animals will love it if you do. It's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it. I do believe it's true. The monkeys stand for honesty. Giraffes are insincere. And the elephants are kindly, but they're dumb. Orangutans are skeptical of changes in their cages. And the zookeeper is very fond of rum. Zebras are reactionaries. Antelopes are missionaries. Pigeons plot in secrecy. And hamsters turn on frequently. What the gas? You'll have to come and see at the zoo. At the zoo. At the zoo.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and the music interlude was At the Zoo in honor of Paul Simon's 80th birthday, week before last, on October 13th. And we want to recognize all the veterinarian technicians out there. It is National Veterinarian Technicians Week, and we visited with the folks at the Animal Protection and Education Center over in Boone at 801 Mamie Eisenhower Avenue. Here is one of their leaders, Lynn Sipperly Price.
Let's talk about your facility. Where are you located?
We are located in Boone, Iowa at 801 West Mamie Eisenhower. It's actually the intersection of Mamie Eisenhower and Marion Street.
And you're a couple blocks east of the courthouse.
Yes, sir.
To help people. Yeah. And what's your mission today?
Well, what we've been doing since our start is we've been offering the public low-cost spay and neutering and low-cost microchipping and vaccinations. We first started out primarily just doing farm cats and other shelter animals just that have a reduced cost so people could afford to get their farm cats fixed instead of bringing kittens to their local facilities.
How many years have you done this?
Well, we first incorporated in 2003, and we were doing it probably off and on, probably for a year or two before we actually established as a nonprofit.
Quarter or once a year?
No, we do low-cost spay neutering at our facility in Boone on Mondays and Tuesdays every week of the year. We do vaccine clinics at our Boone location on Saturday afternoons, the first Saturday and the third Saturday of each month. And in the spring, we have a mobile veterinary unit that we take this to some smaller communities with population of low income there that could use the help.
Your cost seems to be one of your issues that you're addressing. Why is that important?
A lot of people are struggling even before COVID hit, and we want to make it affordable. We are all animal lovers here, so we don't want to see the animal suffer for something that's preventable. So we're trying to make it affordable for people to get it done. We do everything in a package deal so people don't try to pick and choose what they want. We want to see them vaccinated for distemper. We want to see them vaccinated for rabies. And we want to see them microchip. Microchipping is so important. A lot of people don't want to microchip their pet. Oh, it's just a farm cat. And I'm like, you don't understand. If your farm cat gets taken to a shelter and it's not identifiable, it's not going to get adopted because it's a scaredy cat. Having that microchip on your free-roaming cat is its ticket out of jail.
Is there anything else?
We also offer adoptions here. Our claim to fame is we're the largest provider of trap, neuter, return in the state of Iowa.
Congratulations.
Have been everywhere.
That is quite a statement right there.
And we've been doing it for over 20 years now, and we literally have been to all the far reaches of the state of Iowa doing trap, neuter, return. And I don't mean like going there with a van to pick up cats to bring back here. I mean literally sending volunteers out to the field with live traps, doing the trapping, having the mobile unit there, getting them fixed. So at one time, we were serving a 14-county area.
14 counties?
Yeah, on a monthly basis. We were going to all of those counties on a monthly basis.
So it really sounds like you're providing an incredible service to the community.
Yes, sir.
You got a young guy here. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's your name?
My name is Matthew.
Matthew?
Price.
So why is this work important to you?
Because I get paid, I guess.
Get paid?
Oh.
His mom buys him ice cream when he helps.
Oh, okay.
Also, I like dogs a lot, so.
Does it give you a good feeling in your heart?
Sometimes.
Sometimes?
A lot.
Oh, a lot. Okay. It's hard to get too much of that. Do you always want to take care of animals in
your
life?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, this is a great step in that direction. Yeah. Thank you for your service. Yeah. And here's a volunteer, Patsy Larson.
Hi.
Thank you for agreeing to show me around here and do this story. So how did you get involved with helping out here at the clinic?
I started using the service while they were still in the mobile unit at various places around central Iowa. They'd, you know, find a vacant building to use for a day. So, as you know, Pat, I have many cats.
Oh. Do you consider yourself a cat lover?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So, I started using their service when I moved back to Boone in 2004. So, I think after they purchased the building, I was asked to serve on the board. And then immediately, surprise, I was elected treasurer. And I love this. I'm still working full time, but I love working with the clinic and the people.
Mm-hmm. So your chosen profession is an accountant?
Yes.
Okay, so you're very well suited to help out with the books.
Sure.
Sounds like, yeah. So you've kind of grown into this.
Yes, yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
What is it? Okay. Well, what are some of the challenges?
I think the clinic itself is a work in progress. You know, we need to put up more walls, and storage is a problem.
You're describing a really well-lit, wonderful workspace here, but it's all one room.
Right. So prep room here,
yeah,
and a surgery room on the other side.
I see.
And then a laundry and a bathroom in the back over there. Mm-hmm. One thing we should point out is that we need donations. Donations help us keep the cost low. Lynn applies for all sorts of grants.
Oh, so you're helping her with grant writing, I presume, yeah. Well, so what is there a website or what's the contact telephone number?
The website is www.goape.info.
Yes. GoApe, GoApe dot info.
Yes.
And the telephone number is 515-460-SPAY-7729. So those are some of the challenges. What keeps bringing you back more and more? What do you love about this, Patsy?
I think it helps a great number of people. And, of course, it adds to the health of the animals and controls population. So there are many, many benefits. And it's just nice to be doing something worthwhile.
Hard to get too much of that, yeah, especially at our stage of the game. Yes, Lynn?
I wanted to add one thing. A lot of people, when they see our prices, they're just like, how can they be so cheap? Why isn't my local vet that cheap? And as Patsy mentioned, we do write for grants. We do accept donations. A lot of times people will know a neighbor that needs help, and they'll actually sponsor that neighbor's pet. But I want to assure people that this organization was started by three vet techs with college degrees. So it's not like it's some kind of back alley snip and snap and go thing. We literally, and I will say this to any veterinarian's face, other than like the expensive ritzy ones in the metros, we have better equipment than probably 90% of the rural vets in Iowa, only because of the fact we have written grants to get it. So most of the time when veterinarians walk into our surgical suite, they're just like in awe. They're just like, oh man, that's a new gas anesthesia machine. And I'm like, it's one of three. And we have our gas anesthesia machines calibrated annually. A lot of veterinarians don't even bother to have them calibrated. So I'm very proud of our equipment. I'm very proud of our staff. You know, we have more monitors than anybody else.
Super. I love it. It's got a great community service message. It's starting to arrive. You're going to be busy as all get out here shortly. I can tell.
No, yeah. Next week is National Veterinary Technician Week. And our two veterinary technicians just walked in. Lynn is a veterinary technician as well.
Thanks for all you do for pets and animals, of course. So what's your name?
I'm Emma Buffington.
Okay.
And I'm Hannah Slifer.
And you're here as lab technicians? Or vet technicians?
Vet technicians, yep.
Yeah, that's your program. And you're young. Mm-hmm. Are you from Boone or this area?
I'm from South Dakota. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I came to Iowa for school, so I go to Iowa State.
How about you?
I'm from about 30 minutes east of Ames, actually, but I'm in Ames now for school also.
So you're both in school. Well, super. So you get some real-world experience right here with some great, from great folks in Boone County.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you'd like to apply this to a professional career?
I currently just applied to vet school, so I'm just here waiting to hear back, but it helps with experience to get to vet school, hopefully.
I'm actually going human medicine, so kind of applies, not exactly, but I've worked around animals most of my life and kind of, that's my during school work.
Is there anything else?
Well, we love it here. We like helping all the animals, especially the TNRs that may not get as much attention as house pets, but it's been real fun. It's something new every day. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually a really enjoyable place to work. We have a really close-knit kind of group of employees that we work with, and it's just really rewarding. We get to see people that may not be able to afford a lot of the bigger clinics, especially around here with Iowa State and the bigger like emergency clinics that we do send to sometimes. So it's really nice to see those people that may not be able to get their animals seen or in for, you know, yearly things that we get to see.
Well, thank you so much for having some time here before your real busy afternoon. I know you got things to get going on. So thanks for all you do for animals and for humanity.
Well, thank you.
And so what's your name and how long have you been assisting here at this facility?
My name is Dr. Janessa Butterfield. I've been here for about 3 years now.
Uh-huh. And this is one of another special day. I guess every day is somewhat special, but the third Saturday of each month?
Yes. First and the third Saturday of every month, we have vaccine clinics.
Yeah. And so were you pleasantly surprised to have an opportunity to assist with such a nice facility here?
Absolutely. I've spent about 12 years in private practice and discovered that this really was more of my calling, to be able to assist a higher number of people that maybe wouldn't otherwise be able to seek care for their animals.
Oh, I think that's a theme as I'm listening here, a higher calling. It seems like there's a calling, and then there's where you, it's nice that you're able to find where your piece of the puzzle fits all together.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I said, it's been, I've found a lot of joy and happiness doing what I do here. I was content working in private practice for all those years, but I didn't really know what I was missing until I started working here.
Oh, that speaks very well. So the listeners of KHUI can have a destination and realize that people really have a calling to, so they can come here and have their pets taken care of. And it's really a pleasure. Thanks for having the time to go over what's important to you here at the, and let's have the name.
Animal Protection and Education in Boone, Iowa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
You've been listening to all the folks at APE, Animal Protection and Education Center. They do low-cost spay and neutering, vaccinations, and microchipping on the first and third Saturday each month at 801 Mamie Eisenhower in Boone. And their number is 515-460-7729. And let's take a music break with more local talk to come.
Sleeping, I'm empty and aching, and I Watching the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America. All come to look for America. All come to look for America.
Ah, yes, America, another tune from Simon and Garfunkel in recognition of Paul Simon's 80th birthday on October 13th. And in also in honoring our next guests that have settled here in Ames, Iowa, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. How are you?
Hi, good to be here.
It's good to have you with us once again, Susan, and before we introduce your guest today, do you have any announcements for the city?
Oh, Pat, you know, I always have announcements. So many things are happening in the City of Ames in the next 2 weeks. And we'll bring more guests on next week to kind of go into those in greater detail. So I'll just use this as a reminder that if you've been collecting your yard waste and you're looking forward to those no-charge fall free days, we're almost there. The first one is Saturday, October 30th. So 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. That will be your first opportunity to dispose of your yard waste at no charge at the Green RU site on Friel Drive in East Ames. Mm-hmm. If you missed that one, there are three more in November. So those are located on our website. If you need those dates, I can tell you quick, November 13th, 20th, and 27th. But you can get more information on our website, cityofames.org.
Excellent. And I'll have it on our website also.
Great. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to share all this information. Just a couple of ribbon cuttings coming up for some community parks. Franklin Park is October 28th. And then we'll cut the ribbon on the fishing pier that first week in November. But I'll come back again closer to those times with even more details.
Okay. Looking forward to that ribbon cutting out there at Ada Hayden in early part of November. And Franklin.
Yeah, and we have an event coming up on Franklin Park on October 28th. We have a big event coming up on Monday, which is why I wanted our assistant city manager, Deb Childroth, to join us this morning. She has been a leader in our climate action planning for the City of Ames, and just another opportunity to explain what's going to happen Monday and why you might want to get involved.
Excellent. Hi, Childroth. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you.
Great to be here.
Yeah, Ed, what a great topic. I know you've been working very diligently on our climate action plan.
Yes, we have. This has kind of been a long-awaited plan that meets City Council's sustainability goal. And the city has contracted with a consultant, SSG Sustainable Solutions Group. They're actually out of Canada, but they've been working with us on mapping out our process for about the next 18 months. And I think it's important to remember that in this process, we really have two main components that we want to address. The first one is setting our emissions target. And then the second component would be setting up the plan, developing the plan that we're going to follow to meet that target. So that's kind of the high level view of what we're trying to achieve here. Mm-hmm. And throughout this entire process, we are seeking and promoting community engagement and community involvement with this particular project.
Excellent. That's wonderful. It's one thing to have a plan. It's another thing to honor what's its content and having those goals, emission goals. In this process, where are we at with community support? Are you hearing a lot from the Ames community?
Yeah, I think there is definitely a lot of interest and a lot of people who want to get involved or are getting involved. So far, what we've been doing is just really setting the landscape, meeting with City Council, which is the steering committee for this process. And then we have a citizens committee, which is our supplemental input committee. They've had one meeting, and it's really kind of been to this point explaining what the process will be, what is climate action planning, and what kind of information people will be dealing with. And council is very interested in making sure that we reach out to all citizens in the community to participate in this. And we have that another opportunity coming up for that on Monday, October 25th, which will be a town hall meeting for the Community Action Plan.
And that'll be at the City Council facility on Clark?
Yep. So you can participate in one of several ways. You can be there in person. It'll be in the council chambers. It starts at 6 p.m. And you can meet in council chambers. We will also have it broadcasted on City Channel 12 and then live streamed on our Facebook and YouTube channels.
Excellent. Okay. And that's 6 p.m. Monday, October 25th. Well, the Sustainable Solutions Group, are they going to oversee this meeting, or what is their role now that they've been here a matter of quite a few months?
Yeah. They're getting to know Ames and maybe just Iowa in general. When we meet with them on a weekly basis, we talk a lot about what's the weather like in their area compared to what the weather's like here. And so it's been a great partnership in getting to know them. And their role on Monday evening will be to introduce what the objectives are of the Climate Action Plan, inform the public on what the business as usual scenario is, and I'll get into a little bit more of that here in a second, mm-hmm. Talk about emissions planning and target setting, and then getting input after they've presented that information. They'll be participating in the meeting via Zoom, so they're our virtual partner. But the business as usual scenario, so we have to kind of know where we're at in order to know where we want to go. And so we're building information in a model off of the greenhouse gas inventory that was completed a little over a year ago. So they've taken all of that information and they've come up with what would things be like if we didn't change what we were doing. And so that'll set the stage as far as where we're at now, and then gather input on that. And then that information will all be taken to the steering committee, City Council, in November for them to listen to and consider. And then that meeting in November, City Council will also be introduced by SSG to different ways to set a target. So we have not set a target, but council will be introduced to these four different ways that a target can be set. Mm-hmm. And that will just be information for them at that point, so they can consider that and then coming back in December to work through a target.
Well, I'm just fascinated by the Sustainable Solutions Group, your SSG. Do they have many years? It would seem as if they've almost created a business out of the current climate status, if you will, and have now embarked on assisting communities like Ames to improve their carbon footprint, I guess, for lack of a better. Are they a large team? Do they have other communities that they're networking with? Or are they primarily just focused on Ames while they're here?
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe that they have several projects like this going on. We're just kind of one of their clients, so to speak, at this point in time.
Yeah.
We're their only client that I'm aware of in Iowa and probably in the Midwest. The majority of their work has been done with Canadian municipalities and provinces, but they've done some work with communities in Washington State and Oregon. So I definitely think this is their first toe dip in the Midwest, but I think it's a good experience for them, and they've got years of experience on their team in climate action planning and modeling. And they are subcontracting with a more local firm, Confluence, out of Des Moines. And Confluence is helping with the engagement piece of the process.
Yeah, thanks for addressing these. I just can't help but wonder how important this work has become. And fascinating that. And you have a supplemental input committee that is just kind of getting going. How is that committee work going?
Yeah. Yep. So the Supplemental Input Committee was appointed by the mayor and approved by council. And there are approximately 27 members on that committee. It's a rather large group, but yeah. The beauty to that is the members are each representing a different community sector within the Ames community. So we've got faith-based, we have nonprofit, we have residential, business community is represented, and contractors development community is represented, Iowa State students and Ames High School. So just a wide variety of people that are participating that way. And the expectation of these community input members is that they have their own contacts and networks. And so the information that is discussed and shared with them in their committee meetings, they then are expected to go out to their networks and others to share that information and gather input and then bring that back to the larger committee and share that with the city and the consultants. So that's mm-hmm. that's one tool that we're using to collect input. Mm-hmm. But we also have a sustainability page on the city's website that people can go to. So cityofames.org and then go to sustainability. And once you get to that sustainability page, that will show you all of the things that the city's doing and been doing to promote sustainability. But then you'll see a large green box that says Climate Action Plan mm-hmm. on the page. If you click on that, that will then redirect you into the Climate Action Plan page that is dedicated to this project.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the framework that you've established with these 27 individuals that are essentially representing all facets of the Ames community. That is would seem to be very comprehensive. And do they vote on issues, or is it their role to just kind of bring up what's important in their niche group?
Great question, Pat. So this isn't a voting committee. It is really more about gathering input, gathering information, mm-hmm. being that tentacle to reach out to other people who may not feel comfortable coming to meetings or have limited time to be able to participate, but yet if they have a contact or two on the input committee, they can share their ideas, their concerns, and then that information can be brought up or brought to the committee. But again, we're working on additional engagement opportunities so that we are getting the voices of everyone in the community and bringing that to council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pat, if I could jump in for a minute. Yeah. We've already seen some of those engagement opportunities. As you know, Mary Rankin, who's a familiar contributor on your show, she mm-hmm. Is reaching out with students. We will be at a sustainability fair just this coming Wednesday. We were at an ecumenical service last couple of weeks. We have the Climate Action Theater. Deb may have to correct me on the title, but we have got a group from Iowa State that has been showing dramatic performances and sharing information about climate action planning. So we look for these pop-up opportunities, these opportunities to partner mm-hmm. with other groups to help leverage the message that we're trying to get out, because we know that mm-hmm. one committee can't represent the entire community, but it is certainly a start. And then mm-hmm. we're going to do our best to get to other people through other means. And you'll see these efforts continue for the foreseeable future, and we want everybody to have the opportunity to get involved.
Yeah, the term comprehensive, it seems to be an overriding theme here. But I love the Supplemental Input Committee, a concept. So often the link and the messaging will be appropriate and positive to all the different groups. So it seems like you're going to kick off something on Monday night that is pretty unique almost to this type of planning, but worthy of the topic of climate action planning. So
we certainly hope to see some new faces on Monday. So we'll know we're getting the word out if we see people we don't know. And that's always a great opportunity for people to get involved. And like Deb said, if you're not comfortable at this point in time coming to City Hall for the meeting, watch the stream on Facebook Live on the City of Ames YouTube account. There's a streaming link off of our website, cityofames.org/ channel 12. You can get right to the streaming link. So lots of different ways to get involved in Monday's meeting if you don't want to be there in person.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Susan. Important information there. Deb Shildreth, is there anything else that we're overlooking here?
I think we've given a good overview. People are certainly welcome to contact us if they have questions or comments or just want to make sure they're aware of the events that are coming up. Again, we're making sure we're pushing that information out through press releases and sustainability webpage, as well as the Climate Action Plan webpage. And I will add to another way to communicate with us about the Climate Action Plan is we have a newly established email address, and it's sustainability@cityofames.org. So people can email us that way. That comes into the several of our inboxes. So we'll get the message and provide a response or pass the message on if needed. So just another way to enhance communication through this process.
Sustainability@cityofames.org. .org. Okay. I'll have that on our website also. Well, thank you. We'll try to get you moving along for your, a busy Friday, I'm sure, this time of October. But thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames, and Deb Shildreth, Assistant City Manager for the City of Ames. Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay.
It's great to be here.
And what a time it was a time of innocence, a time of confidences. Long ago it must be, I have a photograph. Preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.
I missed your You Name It program yesterday, Thursdays on at 2 to 4, where it featured Paul Simon. That's kind of why I've been dipping into some nostalgia here this morning. But I understand it, your program is re-aired on Monday nights.
That's correct, at 9 p.m.
Yeah, from 9 to 11. Was it the similar format where you had music and then maybe live versions on the second hour?
Correct, yeah.
Well, look forward to that on Monday night from 9 until 11. You Name It by our very own Michael Murphy here. So let's have a bit about our winged wonders, Let's learn about pelicans. Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first cicada of summer or the last flock of barn swallows in autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. And today's phenology is about pelicans. The early autumn azure sky was speckled with glinting morning's light that was spiraling and flowing with glistening points of light. When the spectacle seemingly disappeared, lo and behold, large white wings with black margins were soaring in unison, hundreds of twinkling strobe lights that were disappearing, then reappearing again as the sunlight played upon the visage. American white pelicans are gracing our skies this time of year. Pelicans are a huge water bird with very broad wings, a long neck, and a massive bill that gives the head a unique, elongated shape. Their length is between 4 and 5 feet, and they weigh up to 30 pounds in weight and on average are longer, from beak to tail, than even trumpeter swans. Yet their 9-foot wingspan is only outdone by one other species nationally, California condor. Adult American white pelicans are snowy white with black flight feathers, visible only when the wings are spread. A small patch of ornamental feathers on the chest can become yellow in spring. The bill and legs are yellow-orange. Immatures are mostly white as well, but the head, neck, and back are variably dusky or gray. If you've just started noticing pelicans or haven't seen them yet, don't worry. Their populations are still growing. Like hawks, eagles, and ospreys, pelican populations were decimated in the 1950s by chemicals like DDT accumulating in the environment, which then accumulated in the fish the pelicans ate and poisoning the pelicans. Now that those chemicals have been phased out in America, pelican populations are starting to recover and use more of their historic range, and that includes Iowa. You heard that right? There are pelicans in Iowa. Hundreds of them spend their summers on Iowa wetlands as non-breeders called bachelor pods. There are 100 or so nesting on islands within the Mississippi River, and while most people associate the fish-eating behemoth family and their unique beaks with coastal areas, American white pelicans are actually inland birds with main breeding grounds near the Great Lakes, the Dakotas, and southern Canada. Keep an eye out for them flying through autumn. They're pretty hard to miss. Pelicans fish together and prefer to do so in large groups of a dozen or more birds. The pelicans flap their wings and dip their beaks in a semicircle around a school of fish, directing the fish towards shallow water. Once there, the fish can't dive down to get away, and the pelicans, all in a line, can simply scoop them all up in unison. When one dips their beak, they all dip and come up with a pouch full of fish. This behavior differs significantly from that of coastal-dwelling cousins, the brown pelicans, which drop from the sky and dive entirely underwater after their fish. And contrary to popular belief from Finding Nemo, pelicans do not carry water or fish in their beak pouches while flying. Those pouches can hold up to 5 gallons of water, which at more than 40 is a struggle for the bird to lift, let alone fly with. However, that capacity helps the pelican catch lots of fish in one bite. Once their pouch and mouth is full, pelicans tip their heads back to let most of the water spill out the sides of their beak as the muscles of their pouch contracts. Then they swallow their catch head first. Pelicans are also common food thieves and will swipe a meal from a gull, egret, great blue heron, or even another pelican. And their stealing is successful about a third of the time. American white pelicans typically breed on islands and shallow wetlands in the interior of the continent. The islands or its shores are usually barren of trees or shrubs to inhibit predation from foxes, coyotes, or raccoons. Pelicans of both sexes develop a bump in breeding season called a nuptial knob. The lump forms on top of the bird's beak and falls off after the birds have mated and laid eggs. Its function is not entirely known, but is thought to be a display of fertility. Pelican breeding coloration is also fairly spectacular. The feet and bill turn vivid orange. Although pelicans may lay as many as 6 eggs in a nest, usually only one chick survives. This may be partially due to the sheer amount of care each chick requires. Between the male and female, who both incubate the eggs and co-parent after they hatch, pelican parents must provide approximately 150 pounds of fish to rear a single chick to flight stage later in summer. While adult pelicans are too large for most Iowa predators to tackle, they do make the occasional meal for coyotes, and pelican eggs and chicks are much more appealing to predators like eagles, owls, gulls, crows, and foxes, and even other pelicans. For smaller predators like other birds, pelicans' parents fend off attacks by retaliating with sharp beak jabs, but if a large mammal approaches the nest, the parents often abandon it to ensure their own survival. Pelicans spend winters mainly on coastal waters, bays, and estuaries. Our pelicans overwinter on the Gulf of Mexico. Before migration, pelicans congregate to replenish fat reserves for their big flight. One of these places is Sailorville Reservoir, southwest of Ames. Jester Park in Polk County, along the shores of Sailorville Reservoir, can provide a tremendous landscape to enjoy pelicans. Campground number 4 provides great viewing opportunities when water levels are low, as they are typically in each autumn, and pelicans return to the lake each afternoon and will soar over an embankment, one after another, so close you can hear the wind whooshing through their wings. Large numbers can be seen working the shallow areas of the reservoir for fish. Their favorite fish is gizzard shad. It's native, yet considered a bait fish, with wildly fluctuating populations from year to year or lake to lake. Wherever gizzard shad numbers are high seems to be where large numbers of pelicans congregate this time of year. It seems anything pelicans do, they do in synchrony with each other. From flying in a line one after the next, or lining up to fish, or soaring effortlessly in large flocks, they do everything with unity. Pelicans provide wonderful wildlife outdoor viewing opportunities this time of year. And that's our phonology for today about American white pelicans. Theme music is from John Barleycorn, Must Die by Traffic. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
Without a little barley
coal. Yes, I hope there are pelicans in your skies today. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Runenberg and Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guests, Lynn Sipperly Price, Matt Sipperly Price, Dr. Butterfield, Emma Buffington, Slifer, Susan Gwiazda, and Deb Shildreth. This is Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Simon and Garfunkel, At the Zoo, America, and Bookends. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. I'm Pat Schlarbaum, and see you again on the radio.